This is Focus 580, hour number two of our program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft, is at the controls this morning. In this hour of the program, we'll be talking about identity theft, which continues to be, apparently, the fastest growing crime in America. According to a survey by the Federal Trade Commission, something like 10 million people, give or take a few hundred thousand, were targets last year. Using a variety of methods, criminals steal personal information, and then they use it to impersonate their victims, spending as much money as they can before moving on to someone else. In this hour of the show, we'll be talking about identity theft and also review the steps that you can take to reduce the risk of fraud, and then also talk a little bit about what you do if, in fact, you think that you have been a victim of identity theft. And our guest for the program is Beth Givens. She is the founder and director of the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse that was established in 1992. She's written quite a lot on this issue. She authored the Encyclopedia Entries on Identity Theft for the World Book Encyclopedia of 2004 and also the Encyclopedia of Crime and Punishment, published in 2002. She's also authored the Privacy Rights Handbook, How to Take Control of Your Personal Information, and is co-author of another titled Privacy Piracy, A Guide to Protecting Yourself from Identity Theft. She represents the interests of consumers in public policy proceedings at the state and federal levels, and she is involved in this organization. And if you're interested, and there is good information here on the subject on their website, you can go to the website, which is www.privacyrights.org. And of course, if you have questions, you can pick up the telephone and give us a call here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Ms. Givens, hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. You know, I'm interested just in some general comments about identity theft, and I suppose it's prompted by the fact that on the one hand, you read a lot about just how serious a problem this is. The Federal Trade Commission says it's, I think they get more complaints about this than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you see occasionally articles, for example, here I've got one in front of me. This was published in Business Week, in the online Business Week, just a couple of, maybe about a month or so ago. It is in early July. And they make the observation that while on the one hand, as many as 88 million Americans, more than one in four, had digital data exposed in the past 18 months, that in fact, most often the people who steal that stuff, it never actually results in actual financial loss for consumers, what they say. So their headline they put on this article is ID theft, more hype than harm.
Mm.
So I guess I'm interested in your reaction to that and whether just how serious a problem it is, and is it as serious a problem as we are told?
Well, the that Business Week article, I hadn't seen it, but thanks for bringing it to my attention. They were actually quoting data that they got from our website. We keep track of security or data breaches, and right now the number of records that have been exposed is up over 90 million, almost 91, for about the last year and a half, which is the length of time we've been monitoring data leaks. And I think, you know, data leaks happen because of a laptop being stolen or somebody successfully hacked into a company database, or there's a dishonest insider who's walked off the premises with a bunch of personal data. They're kind of mixing apples and oranges, I think, because the survey data that we look at comes from the Better Business Bureau and the Javelin Institute. They do an annual survey on identity theft where they actually talk with individuals nationwide, a random sample. Their latest survey came up with a figure of about 9 million victims over the last year. Two-thirds of those are the kind of identity theft that I don't consider to be as difficult to deal with, and that's when your existing account, let's just say you lost your credit card or your wallet was stolen and it's your existing account, you learn of it quite soon because you get that monthly account statement and you'll see that there are expenditures on there that aren't yours, and you're protected by the law. You don't have to pay for those, and you get yourself a new credit card. But about one-third of that 9 million is the more difficult type, and that's new account fraud, and that new account is open up because somebody's gotten a hold of your Social Security number. and they've opened up an account. You generally don't know about it for quite some time because they'll use a different address for those monthly account statements. And when you do learn of it, it's oftentimes quite difficult to recover from it. Your credit report and your credit score have taken a hit, so you have, you know, a lousy credit rating. And if you're in the market for new credit, you're in a tough situation. So I actually think 9 million is a big number. And I, in terms of the 88 million records that have been exposed, I think probably the article's right. There's very little evidence that those the exposure, the leak of those records has resulted in identity theft. But there's another figure that comes from the Javelin Better Business Bureau statistic and or survey, and that says that most identity theft victims don't know how it happened. So they don't know how somebody got their Social Security number and was then able to impersonate them to get new credit or to rent an apartment or get utilities or whatever. So I guess I see those two things as apples and oranges, and it annoys me a little bit that the Business Week would come up with the conclusion that maybe identity theft isn't as serious a problem as has been led to believe.
Yeah. Well, I suppose in when you reference a figure like that, that they have in this article, the 88 million Americans who had digital data exposed in the last 18 months, I suppose that includes cases where, oh, for example, that we've seen a computer goes missing that has information on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that in one case, I think there was this case that happened, and eventually it was recovered, and it seems that no one used or accessed that information, and I guess that's as much as they can to determine.
Yeah, that's right.
So that, I suppose, that would end up perhaps being counted
mm-hmm.
as digital data exposed, but
sure.
that at least as far as we know, that no one did anything with that the it wasn't compromised, and so those people are okay for the moment. So as you say, I suppose even if it is only 9 million people affected, that's a lot of people.
Well, yes, and then you add that up. The previous year, the survey found that it was 10 million. The previous year before that, a survey found, I think it was 10 again. And you add up the number of victims over the years, and it does come up to about 1 in 4. But again, there are those two types of identity theft, and most people suffer the kind of identity theft that involves an existing account, and again, it's not as difficult to recover from that as the new account fraud.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that they're one of the things that you certainly urge people to do is to keep careful track of the activity in their accounts. Always make sure that you check your statements. Always make sure that everything that's listed on there are the charges you actually have made.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the best things you can do to start out is all of the information that is sent to you, look that over carefully and make sure that you know that at least what you have done is there and that there's nothing there that you have not done.
Right. And there's actually one more step that's even more important than that, I think. What you've just outlined involves keeping track of existing account fraud. For new account fraud, you need to check your credit report.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where those new accounts will show up. Again, you won't be receiving those monthly bills because the crooks, the monthly account statements, I should say, because the crooks will have them mailed to a different address than yours. So that's one of the reasons why in a fairly recent federal law that started implementation in late 2004, you've got the right to order free of charge your credit report once a year.
And
that's really, I would say that's probably our number one consumer tip to everybody is take advantage of that. Check those credit reports because if you are a victim of new account fraud, it'll show up there.
Yeah, and it's easy to do. It's something that you can do online.
Mm-hmm.
There's a phone number that you can call. You can do it by mail, whichever, if you don't have online access, whichever way you want to do it.
Right.
It's easy to do, and each of the three major credit reporting bureaus is obligated to do this for you once a year. And what you suggest is that you can do it in a way that you make the request from all of them and stagger them so that then every 4 months you should get from one of them get a credit report.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That is what we recommend. For the three bureaus, spread it out across a year and order one today and another one 4 months from today and the third 4 months after that, and then just start over the next year.
Let me ask you this, because I have had this experience, and maybe other people have done too, is to you can go to the website, www.annualcreditreport.com, and it's one that all the three major agencies are all part of this, so you can get to everybody through that one site,
mm-hmm.
that what you will see is that, yes, it is true that there is some information that they're obligated to provide you free, but then what they want to do is they want to sell you some kind of enhanced service. They're,
right.
What they're trying to do is make a little, you know, aside from the fact that they've got to do this free for you, they're trying to make a little bit of money.
Yeah, that's right.
So is that the extra that they will provide to you for a fee, is that worth spending that money to get whatever that extra information? And what is it that they're going to provide to you for the fee that you're not getting for free?
Well, when I ordered mine, I used the phone, which is actually what we recommend, because then you don't get bombarded by those extra services that they're selling that are fee-based. The main one is your credit score. And you don't really need to know your credit score unless you're in the market for credit. Maybe you're going to be refinancing your house. Maybe you're going to be buying a car and getting an auto loan. And then you'd want to know your credit score, because if it isn't high enough, you'll be paying more interest on that loan. But if you're not in the market for credit, you know, do your best to ignore all of those pitches that you're going to get when you go online at annualcreditreport.com, because you'll end up spending money you don't really need to spend. I think another service that they offer is credit monitoring, where they keep you up to date as to what your credit reports have on them. They might get in touch with you if a new account has been posted on your credit report, if there are some new inquiries, companies have been looking into your credit. Those sorts of things are signals of identity theft, and that can be quite useful. But again, you've got this free credit report given to you under federal law, and if you do the staggering approach every 4 months, you do a pretty good job of keeping track of what's going on your credit report. Looking for indications of fraud. So you do have to be rather resolute when you use the online annualcreditreport.com to get your free credit report, because you're right. They try to sell you some services that you may not need. In fact, it's quite likely you don't need them.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Beth Givens. She is the founder and director of the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse. Good information there on this subject on their website, which is www.privacyrights.org. Or if you have questions, you can certainly call us. We have a couple of people here ready to go, and we'll get right to them. The number, by the way, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. And Urbana is first up here, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that my wife and I use 3 credit cards, which we pay off whenever they're due each month. And when we went to check our credit, we found that we were being penalized for having too many credit cards. And then when we thought, looked at each other and said, how could that be? And then I got online, and I'll never do that again with these credit cards, because their complaint system is based on a vendor having some sort of vendor or transaction involved. And this was just a couple days ago, and we didn't have a vendor or a transaction involved. We're really complaining about the credit score, and that we'd gotten erroneously, we thought. So I just wanted to put that out there and see if you had any comments about that, because I guess what I'm going to have to do is what you just suggested, and that is go to the phone customer service, and I hope I get better results there.
Yeah, interesting. So your credit score was lower than you had thought it would be, since you were obviously pay things off. Yeah, I find that very interesting. I don't really know if I have a good answer for you. Have you checked your credit report just to make sure you aren't a victim of identity theft?
Well, that's the next thing. I want to find out if we had been once long ago when we visited Florida, I got a very bad impression about the credit bureaus from that, because when they put together a list of the charges that were erroneous, and it was pretty obvious because we'd been back home, and then they started using the MARD down in Florida, and we're back here in Illinois. It was pretty obvious which ones weren't ours. And
yeah.
When they made up that list, They did an extra $50 charge for us for, you know, that we were supposed to pick up part of those erroneous charges. And when I did the list, I could see it clearly there, but I'm sure a lot of people would have just accepted the list.
Yeah, that's why it's really important to check those monthly account statements. But I would strongly recommend that you get your credit reports. And by the way, in this situation, get all three of them at once. Don't use the four-month staggering approach. You need to see what's on all three of your credit reports to get a good idea of what's going on. And you know, it's hard to believe that you'd have a lower credit score just because you have only three credit cards. I think the average American household has 8 or 9 credit cards.
Right.
And, of course, you pay them off, and the average household usually carries over a balance from month to month. So that's it's a little bit puzzling, but, again, you need to order all three of your credit reports right away, I would say, and I would use the phone number.
Will do. Thanks.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, thanks for the call. And it sounds as if you would I expect you would say that people should – to the extent that it's possible, limit the number of credit cards that they have. I mean, you know, if you could get by with 2 or 3, why have 10?
Yeah, you know, the credit score is really a complex score. It's created by an algorithm of all kinds of different factors that change from day to day. There's a good book, very easy to understand, that goes in depth into credit scores, and it's by a syndicated newspaper columnist, Liz Weston, and I think the title is just Credit Scores. But if you're interested in that sort of thing, if your listeners are interested, it really is good to pay attention to all of that. It really involves not maybe how many credit cards you have. But I guess it's that balance that you carry over month to month, and that's one of the more important factors of coming up with the credit score, although from the story that your caller just gave, it doesn't make sense to me at all. So that's why it's just so complicated. And it's actually, the book and other people know a lot more about credit scores than I do. So that's why I recommend, you know, if you're interested in the score, that's a pretty good book to read. It's written for the layperson.
Yeah, it looks like the book is, the title of the book is, and it's coming up here on my computer.
Oh, great.
Your Credit Score, How to Fix, Improve, and Protect the 3-Digit Number That Shapes Your Financial Future. It's got a long title, by Liz Weston.
Mm-hmm.
It's published in paperback, and it looks like the publisher is Prentice Hall. It's a couple years old, but it looks to me, I'm on the Amazon webpage here,
uh-huh.
So it looks like you should be able to anybody should be able to get the book, or possibly at a local bookstore near them, if that's what they're interested
in. Yeah, perhaps. And it's not a long book either. It's an easy read.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Let us continue, and we'll talk again with the next caller, and that would be someone in Champaign, line 2. Hello.
Yeah, my information was compromised here, I don't know, a couple months, 2-3 months ago, actually. So what happened is I called on the credit bureau, and, you know, you can put a freeze on it, but it's for 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in some ways it doesn't make a lot of sense, because if you're really a smart crook, what you do is wait till after 90 days.
Right.
And then you use it. There was to be, well, another point is that it was not, everything's automated. So trying to talk to somebody is, I don't think it's possible. Everything, when you go and you put, you know, do the number, and then they do send verification. But these service bureaus make lots and lots of money from this, and so, you know, they're not so interested in the freezes, because, you know, this decreases the number of times that they use them, you know, that people mm-hmm. can use the service. I think there was supposed to be legislation, and they were going to make it that if your identity was, you know, in terms of fraud, that you could have a freeze put on your account, and I can't see why individuals can't freeze their accounts.
I know. Yeah, there are lots of things going on in your story there. What sort of situation did you have? Was it an existing account or a brand-new account?
No, it was through a university, not this one here. It was in Ohio.
Oh, and there was a data breach?
There was a data breach.
Yeah. Yeah, what you did was called a 90-day fraud alert, and you're right. If you're not actually a victim of identity theft, And if you don't actually have a police report stating that you were a victim, you only have the ability to put on that 90-day fraud alert. And anybody, you don't even have to receive a security breach notice letter, anybody can take advantage of the 90-day fraud alert. And what that does is, let's just say there's a crook down at Circuit City opening, you know, buying a large screen TV and a bunch of computers, and they decide, you know, what they're going to do is pay for it with a bogus credit account. So they open up a brand new credit account. If you have that fraud alert, a statement comes up on the credit report when Circuit City checks your credit, and it says, "I may be a victim of fraud. Call me at this phone number before extending credit." So you would then get a phone call saying, "Are you down at Circuit City, order, you know, buying a large screen TV and opening up credit?" And you would say, "No, that's not me. You know, don't honor that transaction." So that's what the fraud alert does. And unfortunately, under federal law, you can't extend it to a 7-year extended alert unless you actually are a victim of identity theft. When that bill was going through Congress, we consumer advocates fought against this very weak measure, but we lost. And unfortunately, non-victims, and that includes people who've received these security breach letters, are only able to get that 90-day alert, and then, you know, what you have to do is renew it every 90 days, which you can do, and it is free. But you're right, there's some legislation in Congress which unfortunately is also rather weak, and it would wipe out, it would do something called preemption. It would preempt state laws that already are on the books, and most of the state laws are much stronger than the bill that's being considered in Congress.
Yeah, well, I think the one in Illinois was a very strong one. I think it was maybe for people who are retired or maybe over 65 could put a freeze.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a freeze is even stronger than a fraud alert, and it's sort of what we call the ultimate protection. And I'll look on my list in just a moment and see if Illinois is one of the freeze states. I think it is. But with a freeze, what you do is essentially turn off the credit report. In the eyes of a credit issuer, it looks as though you don't have a credit report. And so let's go back to the scenario at Circuit City. You've got a crook attempting to open up an instant credit account. They check your credit, which Circuit City does to make sure that you're not a risk, and there's no credit report to check, and they instantly, you know, turn them down, saying, you know, obviously there's something going on here. This individual's frozen their credit. And the freeze is, I think under the federal law, the only people who'd be able to get a freeze, I shouldn't say federal law, I should say bill in Congress, the only people able to get that freeze would be identity theft victims, which doesn't make sense. It's the proverbial closing the barn door after the horses are out.
Right.
We think anybody should be able to get a freeze.
Well, you know, even if you had, there was, I think the one, whether it is state law or one that they proposed here, is that, you know, I think 65 and over, you could get the freeze.
Oh.
And actually, younger than 65, I think maybe it might be $10, you know, to do the freeze, but then it costs you another $10 to, if you wanted to take it off, you know, in terms of credit.
Oh, yes, actually, I'm looking on my list right here, and that's it. Yeah, in fact, it comes into effect January 1st, 2007.
Yeah. Well, in fact, it was, you know, and this is what, in terms of the politicians, is that, you know, it's a way that, you know, they can get around this then. They get this other one that's, you know, the weaker one.
The weaker one in Congress that would preempt the states. Yeah,
right.
It's a very bad bill. It's H.R. 3997, if anybody's interested.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you for the call. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Beth Givens. She is the founder and director of the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse. That's based in San Diego, California. She does a lot of speaking on these issues. She's often interviewed by media on consumer privacy issues. She's also authored a couple of books, The Privacy Rights Handbook, How to Take Control of Your Personal Information, and she's also co-author of Privacy Piracy, A Guide to Protecting Yourself from Identity Theft. If you're interested, you have online access to the internet. You can go to their website, and there's a lot of information on this subject there, and that's www.privacyrights.org. Also, someone wanted us to mention the phone number to call to get credit reports, and I have it right here in front of me. You make sure that I'm giving the right number.
Okay.
Here. It's 877-322-8228.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Okay.
That's it.
Otherwise, people can go, if you want to try it online or look at there, it's www.annualcreditreport.com. com. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Other things, just general things you might say that people should do to try to reduce the risk of fraud, of identity theft?
Yeah, mail theft is one of the ways that identity thieves get the information that they then use to commit fraud. So, you know, make sure you've got a, if you're in a neighborhood where there has been mail theft, get yourself a locking mailbox. Another thing that you should do, since obviously wallet theft does also lead to identity theft, is clean out your wallet. Try not to carry anything in your wallet that has your Social Security number on it, which is easier said than done, but definitely don't carry the Social Security card. If you have an insurance policy and the card has the SSN on it, we recommend that you make a photocopy of that card, cut it down to card size, and then either blacken out or cut out the last four digits, so that you're carrying, you have your insurance card on you, or your medical card, your HMO card, and then you can provide this, the remaining four digits, when you're there in person. We've not heard that particular tactic to be a problem for people. But if you're carrying a Medicare card or a military card, I would recommend that you don't use that tactic, because you probably need to show the real thing when you get service. And unfortunately, those cards do have the SSN on it. A terrible mistake, I think, was made when the military ID number or the serial number became the SSN, also, I think, a terrible mistake for the Medicare number to be your Social Security number, because it forces people to carry these cards in their wallets, and if the wallet is stolen or lost, well, then they're at risk for identity theft because the Social Security number is then exposed.
Yeah, it does seem that used to be more common that Social Security number was used as a kind of an ID number in many of these kinds of applications. It at least seems that in some cases that insurance companies and schools and other places that had used these are moving away, for this very reason, are moving away from using that number.
Yes, they are, and it is because of the crime of identity theft. In some states, they've passed laws saying that universities and colleges cannot use SSNs as student IDs. In other states, the university systems have adopted that voluntarily.
Let's talk with some other callers here. We have someone in Rantoul, community nearby, line one.
Good morning,
yes.
Liz. Liz or Elizabeth?
Beth.
Okay, yeah. I got two things here. I have in my hands my original Social Security brochure, and here's what it's 40 years old, 1964. It says your card shows the number of your Social Security account. It is necessary to identify the account as belonging to you. Your number is also used by the Internal Revenue Service as a taxpayer identification number to be shown on tax returns and upon request to banks, employers, and others where you receive dividends, wages, and interest, or other income. The Social Security card should not be used for cashing checks or similar purposes. And my card says at the very bottom, for Social Security and tax purposes, not for identification. This
right.
is a real old one.
Right.
And I talk to bankers, and they say, I'd like to see that. I've never seen one of those.
Yes, I my Social Security card is, I think, from the same era as yours.
Yeah.
And it indeed says that. But unfortunately, there's never been a law that prohibits the financial industry from using the Social Security number as a customer ID number or as a way of verifying a customer's legitimacy. And therein lies the problem, because unfortunately the credit industry has adopted the Social Security number as kind of a key identifier. So
yeah.
When you fill out a credit application, and let's just say you're a crook, if you've got somebody's name and you have their date of birth, which is easy enough to get,
yeah.
And you've got an SSN, that's all you need to impersonate them to obtain credit. And that's because the financial industry has adopted the Social Security number as a key customer identifier and as a verification tool, and it really should never have happened.
That's right. You know, I'm asked to show identification when I cash a check.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want your driver's license. And yet, it's real easy. You get a driver's license number, and you can go right and get a Social Security number.
Oh, is that?
Oh, absolutely can.
Does Illinois use the SSN for a driver's license number?
No. But once you get a driver's license number, you can get all kinds of information. And I've been thinking, like, having a little printed up, a stamp that says, this access to this number is for this specific purpose only. mm-hmm. any other use of this number will constitute willful criminal attempt and or criminal use or identity theft by the payee or the signee or whatever, and the signee or the payee agrees no contest should criminal charges be preferred against that individual.
Uh-huh.
You know, like you want to go drive a car, test drive a car, they want your driver's license, so they look up your credit score and all this other stuff, and I said, hey, I'll show you my insurance policy. I'm an insured driver. I don't want you snooping around any extra, so you're going to sign out this piece of paper that says, I agree to check out my validity of my driver's license and the validity of my insurance and my driver's record for, let's say, 3 or 5 years. Any other attempts to gain any other information will be considered identity theft under such and section, whatever, the state of Illinois, and the person signing this statement and or representative of this firm or any member of this organization will plead no contest to criminal identity theft should this information be attempted to be gained, and you will erase this information from your data banks within 30 days of whatever and stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, I think it would
I'm a professional investigator. I'm in retirement now. I can be a real jerk or a harder, you might say. But I have had, a long time ago, an unauthorized use of my Social Security number as a minor incident, and it opened up my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a nasty thing going on. And
well,
the other thing is the finance industry. Do you understand the history on credit cards? I'm sort of diverting off another subject, but it is interesting. Back in the early 70s, it was difficult to have a credit card. It was very prestigious.
Mm-hmm.
When we had the interest rates go up during the mid-70s, with the oil embargo and all that, all of a sudden the bankers looked at the rule of 72 and says, hey, we can make lots of money. And so all of a sudden they started handing out credit cards like Carter's Little Liver Pills.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you start getting credit card offers all over the place. All of a sudden, people who were unable to, 5 years before, unable to get a credit card, all of a sudden could get one. And at that time, having a credit card was very prestigious. And then, I got two Visas, I got a MasterCard, I got a JCPenney, I got a Sears, I got this and that. You know, it's a big thing. Then all of a sudden, they start racking up. And then all of a sudden, I started watching. I knew the Rule of 72. And I understand the theory of fractional reserve banking. And all of a sudden, I just started seeing the minimum payments going down. They don't want you to pay them off. They want you to pay that 23% interest. For since 1983, I've been showing people the difference, you know, in compound interest and how much money you make. You know, you put money in a bank and get your 4%, but if you're paying 23% on that end of 36 years, it's an unbelievable amount of money difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the banks say, we lost $850 million last year due to bad losses on credit cards. Well, they're lying to you because they made $3.5 billion in interest on credit cards. They don't tell you that.
Yeah. That gets
anyhow,
us into a little bit different.
I'm not going too long. I just wanted to say that.
Yeah.
You got a great show going on. I'm getting a hold of your book.
Thank you.
I'll get off the line.
Well, that certainly gets at the question of why it is that we have so much debt and people get in trouble with their credit cards because it's probably too easy to get them. But let me just mention one other thing, and that is that I'm sure that you would recommend that people take the step to eliminate unsolicited pre-approved credit card offers coming in the mail.
Absolutely.
Which happens all I used to get them all the time until I opted out, and now I don't get them. That's
right.
Another one of those issues, because you certainly don't want somebody coming up and taking that out of your mailbox and then using that to apply for credit
right.
in your name.
Yeah, and that's an easy thing to do. You can just it's a federally mandated phone number, 888-5-OPT-OUT, and what you're doing is just telling the three bureaus with one easy phone call, don't send me any more of these pre-approved offers of credit. It's not the bureaus who send them. It's the credit card issuers who purchase mailing lists from the bureaus. But you're opting out of receiving those pre-approved offers of credit. Many people receive, you know, several every week.
Yeah, and every time you get one of those, someone has checked your credit.
Absolutely.
To find out whether you're a good risk or not.
Well, they've checked your credit to an extent, not enough to put a dent in your credit score. It's not the sort of thing that affects your credit score, but they've asked the credit bureaus to give them a list of people who meet certain criteria, and it means that you're meeting certain criteria for the kind of person they want to catch as a customer.
Well, let's go to another caller here. Somebody on a cell phone. They're on the road near Hoopston. This is line 4. Hello.
Yes. Hello, and yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And just a couple brief comments. First of all, I'm the victim of identity theft, and it's a great way to lose weight fast. I lost my identity by answering a bogus PayPal email message saying that I needed to update my information for my account, and I happen to have a PayPal account.
Yeah.
And I, like an idiot, went ahead and filled in the necessary information, including my credit card number, confirming that, and my Social Security number.
Uh-huh.
And didn't think much more of it. About a month and a half later, I got Diners Club bill for $10,000.
Oh, my.
Fortunately, Diners Club took care of that right away, and I figured, well, I'm okay. And about 2 weeks later, Dell Security Department called me, and someone had tried to open a credit account with Dell using my name and my Social Security number, which, as you were speaking about a little bit earlier, I have a police report thanks to that, and I was able to get the 7-year extended.
Oh, that's good.
Credit. But I do want to make the comment that Citicorp, who issued the Diners Club, offered me on the phone membership to their credit monitoring service, security service, and I don't want to, I guess I shouldn't make an advertisement, but I'm paying $9 a month to them, and by golly, it works.
Yeah, it does, and you would be in the category of people that I think would find a credit monitoring to be useful. And $9 a month, do you monitor all three of your credit reports then?
They do. And as a matter of fact, in your discussion, you're quite right. Trying to reach any of these credit bureaus on the phone is mission impossible. And when I became in touch with Citicorp and went ahead with this plan, they had somebody assigned to me in their office. And that person, I mean, I held the line while they actually talked with two of the three credit bureaus right then, contact people right there. So I'm sort of relieved. I recently applied for some credit, in fact, a couple times, and immediately, within 24 hours, the Citicorp system alerted me.
Yeah, that's great, and that's what credit monitoring services do. You know, you mentioned that you had responded to an email that looked like it was from PayPal.
Exactly. And by the way, that woke me up. PayPal and eBay, every day I'm getting these messages on my computer. I teach at Illinois State University, I'm getting messages from all over the place asking me to verify this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And what one does is forward this message to PayPal or eBay at spoof@paypal.com, and they send me back a very polite message saying, yes, this is bogus.
Uh-huh.
But now I do have a question. Is anything being done about, I mean, can people trace these thieves down and do anything at all about them?
Well, a lot of them are overseas. They're not in this country.
Uh-huh.
And you're right. They're very, very prolific. I, too, get, you know, many of them every day. They look like they come from all of the major banks, from PayPal, from eBay.
They look so official.
They do.
Know,
they're very amazingly. You know, every once in a while you'll see a misspelling, but it's called phishing. Phishing.
Right. The one thing that I did learn in the process of my education on this is that unless you see your name, in other words, dear Mr. So-and-so, with your name, with any inquiry about your account, then it's bogus.
Well, I'd go even further and just say that no reputable company is going to send you an email asking you to verify your account information and your social security number and your date of birth. They just don't operate that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even if they do have your name there, I would ignore any incoming emails that you receive that purport to be from a financial company, a PayPal or an eBay. They just don't operate that way.
Uh-huh.
There's a good website, antiphishing.org, and it explains just exactly what you've experienced and gives an awful lot of examples of these phishing messages.
Well, okay. Thanks a lot, by the way, for the 5 opt-out telephone number. I'll be calling that today when I get home.
Great.
All right, very good.
Thanks for taking
my call. And we will keep on going here. Just let me reintroduce again our guest, Beth Givens. She's the founder and director of the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, established in 1992. They're based in San Diego, California. She does a lot of writing and speaking on this particular issue that is identity theft. They do have information on their website on the subject. So if you're curious, you want to get some information, you can get some background, you can go to www.privacyrights.org, and you will find a lot of the information that we have discussed, including the information on getting your free credit report. There also is the phone number to call for the opt-out that we've talked about, so that if you don't want to get unsolicited offers of credit cards, you can do that. I think also there's on your website you have the information from the Direct Marketing Association. So if you don't want to get junk mail,
mm-hmm.
that's another thing that you can do. You can contact them and opt out on that. So there are good ways to try to cut down on the amount of stuff that you don't want. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. The next caller we have is over in Indiana, line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. Givens, for being on WILL.
Yes, thank you.
While you've been talking, I've gone on the internet, gotten the number, went on the telephone and got the 3 credit reports for myself. And it was interesting that they had my name and address based on my phone number.
Uh-huh.
It was all automated. I never spoke with a real person. But it was interesting to do that. I went ahead and ordered all 3. Then the conversation you had with the gentleman from the University of Illinois State University, was a little frightening because I also have had some bogus PayPal and eBay solicitations, and I think by mistake on one occasion, a spouse did reply to one. But I've also made transactions internationally buying, selling automobiles, even through eBay. Now that I'm on the web, I'm also going to do the opt-out thing. But I'm left with a couple of questions for you. First of all, the number of times we request a credit check, like I've just done 3,
mm-hmm.
or 1 request through the 3 different firms, does that diminish our credit report?
No, it does not. You can check your credit as many times as you want, and it will not lower your credit score.
I see.
But if you were to go on a shopping spree, let's say you're going to go out over the weekend and you're interested in a car and you go down, auto sales lane there, and from one car dealer to the other, and then you apply for credit at each one of those, that will put a dent in your credit score, because it looks like maybe you're having trouble getting credit, maybe you're getting turned down, or maybe you're an irresponsible credit user. So if you apply for credit, multiple applications, that is likely to lower your score.
I see. Now, another question I have is, would my wife's credit, my spouse's credit rating, be independent of mine, and would her information come up on the automated system through our same phone number, our home phone number?
I doubt it. Do you have a lot of accounts that are joint accounts? Because there would be that if you did, there would be aspects of each of your credit reports, you know, that would be drawing information from those joint accounts.
I think even though we maintain our cards separately, I think both of us have them in joint.
Uh-huh.
So probably the report is going to be a commingled report.
No, it's it if she were to call in, I guess they would ask for her Social Security number. So they'd be pulling up her credit report as opposed to yours, even though you'd be calling from the same phone number.
I see.
But you'd have to be, you know, have to be careful that they're pulling them separately. I mean, they are known to make errors. I think the worst kind of error would be if you had a son with your same name and that were Bill Smith Jr. Sometimes files can get mixed up because of name similarity.
Yes. I know I've even had, now, the odd circumstance is that I've had securities sent to me for another man in Indiana who has my identical same name, at least with respect to middle initial.
Uh-huh.
But I recognized immediately that they were nothing that I had ordered or purchased. And then I went through the internet and found out that there was another man with the same first name, middle initial, last name, roughly my own age, but he lived in another part of the state.
Oh, interesting.
And I immediately contacted that man and said, I'm sending these things to you immediately. The irony was his wife had the same name as my own spouse.
That is amazing. Yeah,
we have an unusual name.
I think so. I think that all of you need to be checking your credit reports quite quite regularly, just to make sure that you don't have file mix-ups, because file mix-ups is another kind of problem with credit reports, different from identity theft, and it's because they have these massive computer systems and they're pulling data from all kinds of sources, and they could very well pull in, say, the credit cards that man has and put them into your credit report. That sort of thing could happen.
The stranger aspect of that was that this man had been purchasing his securities as a part of an employee. Buy it through his employment, through his employer. And yet they obviously had his name and address,
Yeah. But
it still got my address affixed to his name and his securities and sent to me.
Well, he's fortunate you're an honest person.
Well, I couldn't do anything. Yes. Well, I've enjoyed your conversation immensely. I'm going to be going to your website and checking out all the
features. Thank you.
But I know some of the other questions that I had were about the opt-out and then also the other gentleman from Illinois State University and the incidents of eBay and PayPal was something that frightened me because I've had a similar experience to his.
Yeah, the Fishers of the world are very, very prolific, and as I said, most of them are overseas, or at least that's what is thought.
Well, thank you, and I'm enjoying the program very much.
Thanks for the call.
Goodbye.
Let me once again give the telephone number that we mentioned, because someone else called and said they would like to have the number to call to get the free annual credit report. Here you go. It is 877-322-8228. And also a lot of good information on the subject, including fact sheets on what you can do to reduce your risk of fraud and what to do if it happens to you, if identity theft happens to you, available on the website of the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, which is www.privacyrights.org. Our guest this morning, Beth Givens, is the founder and director of the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse in San Diego, California. Let's talk with someone up in Chicago. This is Line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I believe I was a victim of identity theft, and this is unusual, because when I went in to cash my check, I believe one of the employees stole a card out of the envelope, and a few months later I kept getting messages from the Department of Motor Vehicle telling me it was time to renew my bumper stickers and my licenses on my LTD, which is unusual because I'm visually impaired.
Huh.
But for years, I kept getting those calls. It's time to renew your license. It's time to get some new stickers. I always joke and say they could have at least given me a ride in the thing.
Now, did you check with your Department of Motor Vehicles to make sure that somebody hadn't gotten a duplicate card? Or I suppose what they could have done if they gotten your card, do you have evidence that they actually stole it?
Well, I don't have evidence, but when I went in to cash the check, the guy was rather surly. He didn't want to do it. But he did do it, and I didn't find out until later that he had stolen one of the cards out of the envelope, the medical card.
Oh, a medical card. We were at this end.
I didn't find out until later on, but then I kept getting letters from the Department of Motor Vehicles saying that, in fact, they wanted to do that. It was time to renew my LTD license, the license for the car, and it's time to get new stickers and this type of thing. And finally, in the 1980s, I got a letter that said, since I was dead, they would no longer send me the check, so I had to go back there and convince them I didn't. It was a surprise to me. But
Hopefully you've gotten it straightened out since then, have you?
Well, I thought I did, and I think I did, but and I don't want to mention the satellite company, so don't cut me off, but I kept getting letters from a certain satellite company telling me that I owed them money. And that was unusual because I've had cable for the last 13 years.
Yeah.
But I actually got a call from a law firm that they had hired to get this money from me. You know, and I told them, they said, well, isn't your name Irwin Griffin? And I said, no, my name is Irvin Glenn. And they said, uh-oh.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it could have been a mistake on their part. You know, they're all using these very large databases, and they could be goofing up. But it also could be that you are a victim of fraud. If you haven't checked your credit report lately, I think it would be really important that you do that.
Could I do that at the number that David just gave?
Yes, uh-huh.
877-322-8228.
Yep.
That's right, uh-huh.
Okay, well, I could do that there. I could check it. I probably should have done it a long time ago. I would have done it a long time ago if I knew where to call. Might have saved me some grief. But like I said, I always joke to people and say that the guy who got the car in my name, at least he's going to give me a ride, but didn't get one. So I guess, by the, and I heard the man who called, who was the investigator, talking about how you have to erase this information. And that's good advice. However, in today's high-tech world, once something gets on the Internet, I fear it's there forever. I mean, there's just so many people with personal computers, and it's just so easy to send information from one place to from A to Z.
Well, what the trick is, if you are using the Internet to order your credit report or to even do shopping, which I do a lot, by the way, just make sure that you're using a secure transmission link, and you look for that golden padlock down in the lower right-hand corner and make sure the padlock is closed, and that means that basically that transmission is encrypted, or the data is scrambled. So if it gets captured along down the route somewhere, it can't be figured out. It looks like gibberish. So anytime you're doing anything involving sensitive personal information, look for that golden padlock and make sure it's a secure transmission.
We're going to have to stop because we are here at the end of our time. Let me, again, because so many people have asked for it, let me mention the phone number once more. This is the number to call to order your free annual credit report. It's area code 877-322-8228. Otherwise, if you're interested in information on the topic of identity theft, you can go to the website of the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, www.privacyrights.org. Our guest, Beth Givens, founder and director of the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse in San Diego, California. Ms. Givens, thanks very much.
Well, thank you.